What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another very exciting edition of the Burnout Brighter podcast. This is episode 155. My name's Matt, and I'll be your host for this evening's events. I'm joined, as always, by the incredible, the over 9,000 man himself, Mr. Lou, a.k.a. Matt Seedling. What's going on, Lou?
What's up, folks? Glad to be here. Good to see everyone.
How you doing, my dude? How's your weekend? How's the DBZ going? I know we'll get into it in what's new, but Sparks Notes.
Yeah, no, it's great. Rewatching DBZ for the first time since I was young, yes. And it really holds up so far. I mean, we're mostly all the way through it, but very good. Loving it. I still loving it. Still watching it as every possible opportunity.
Yes. Oh my God. Now you're making me want to rewatch it. I just wanted to see the new movie recently, but we'll get into that in a sec. Sure. And this. On this week's episode, we are joined by someone who's doing incredible work out in this industry, shining spotlights on diversity and so much more. We have the EDI coordinator from Yuki himself. Dom, what's going on, my friend? How are you doing?
Hi, I'm all good. Hope you are well as well.
Very excited to have you on board, my friend. I feel like this has been a long time coming. The back and forth emails, the Destiny being like, we need to get Dom on. I'm glad you're finally here to talk to us all about Ryuki and Raise the Game.
Nah, excited as well. And definitely always up for anything anime related with hearing your Dragon Ball. Oh, yeah.
Perfect. I mean, then, you know what? We can just completely sideline all of the important conversations that we have. This is now a Dragon Ball podcast. That's all we're going to talk about for the next 40 minutes. Obviously, this is the most important stuff that we can do today. But Dom, if someone doesn't know you, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about what you're doing with Raise the Game and with Yuki?
Of course. So, hi, every listener, watcher, et cetera, I'm Dom Shaw. I'm the EDI, which stands for Equality, Diversity, Inclusion Coordinator for Yuki, which is the trade body for video games and interactive entertainment. I'm also an Autistica Play Ambassador for the charity Autistica, who are the UK's leading research charity for autism and have greater links across other neurodiversity charities. And probably there's like a mixture of other kinds of things around diversity that I'm linked in, like Limit Break. I'm a Limit Break mentor and mentee, etc., etc. But in terms of my role, fundamentally, it's the short and sweet of it is anything to do about making the games industry a much more safer, inclusive, and positive place to work, play, and sell games. That's fundamentally my role, even if that goes against some things that people who I work with do. But that doesn't matter, because I'm here to be a rebel of positivity rather than a sheep of negativity, as I like to say in my head. Yeah, fundamentally, I help companies through advice, guidance, one-to-one meetings, both in person and online, put on activities. So, for example, a few months ago, we did an event called the Festival of Food, which was all about creating a safe space, inclusive event where alcohol wasn't encouraged. People who didn't feel comfortable, don't want to be always forced to drink alcohol, didn't have to, because it's a common stereotype in game, at least when you work in games, that alcohol is the number one thing to socialize. And we want to be able to say, no, it's not. It's just like any other socialization. You just need a great space, an inclusive atmosphere to have a good time, which we were able to prove because we had 300 people in attendance and 3 on the waiting list. So it was really great. And, you know, that's just a brief taste of, you know, something we do. Hopefully, in this episode, I'll be talking about some of what's coming up for the rest of 2022. Not to date this too much, but I'll also talk about some of the previous stuff and go from there.
Well, that's amazing, dude. Like, that's one of the things, like, when we first, you know, kind of made our connection with you guys over almost a year ago now.
I think it's longer, if not,
like, right? A year and a half. I know. It's wild. It's just that, you know, the important work that you're doing. And I love that, you know, you're making a space for people to be accepted for who they are, to enjoy games regardless of where they come from or what background they are. It's just, it's so incredibly important. And, you know, we shout about diversity from the hilltop. So I'm so happy to hear that you're doing the same. And hell yeah, having a 300 person event that was completely dry with 300 person waiting list. That's incredible. giving people more opportunities and spaces to be themselves is always appreciated. So kudos to you. And you're right. We're going to get into the nitty and gritty of it in a little bit. But first off, I just wanted to say thank you for doing what you do. It's incredibly important. And you be that rebel for positivity, because that is everything that we're about.
Much appreciated.
All right, let's before we get into all the good news of Yuki and Raise the Game, let's do a bit of check-in first, because we have some Dragon Ball updates that I'm dying to hear. So, Lou, let's start with you. I'm gonna kick the trend here a little bit. What's new? What's been going on? What have you been up to?
Yeah. So again, obviously watching Dragon Ball Z, watching through the Kai version of Dragon Ball mm-hmm. Z. We're at the Buu saga right now, and the last few sagas are separated from the rest of the show. So the main Dragon Ball Z Kai is from the Saiyan saga to the end of the Cell saga. And then what's called the final chapters is the World Tournament saga and the Buu saga. And my girlfriend and I both agreed when the final chapter started, it felt like the show took a bit of a different tone. Mm-hmm. And we felt the writing was better. That being said, she still hasn't seen Boo. I kind of started watching ahead of her. And when Boo comes in, it gets a lot more silly. It's definitely, again, a change of tone from what we're used to with how Frieza is and how Cell is and all that. Boo is definitely on a different, very different character tone and mm-hmm. all that.
You just completely blew my mind. I forgot about the world tournament that happens mm-hmm. in between there with Vegeta going Majin and like the whole like, is he going to be a villain again and stuff. I completely forgot about that era. You like in my mind it goes like Cell to Boo like pretty much immediately, but wow, just blew my mind open for a sec.
Totally, yeah. And we finally get some well-earned Vegeta character development when he goes Majin. It's great. They really threw everything at the wall for this last push. Mm-hmm. Like you know, there's the demon of the underworld, that Deborah, right, that comes out,
right?
His character model is awesome, and they went really sci-fi with it, and there's a you know, a sorcerer Babidi, and it's they really went all out for this last little bit. So we've been really enjoying that. We did end up going to see Dragon Ball Super Heroes. And we wanted to see it because it was still in theaters, and we were worried that by the time we caught up, it may not be in theaters anymore.
Right.
So we went to go see it, and it was fantastic. The animation was so good. I loved that they went with something new with the 3D models, and it was overall a really tight movie. Very efficient, and it was just a great story. And we love Piccolo. So to see some more Piccolo action is great, and have him be sort of the focus of the film.
Yes, dude. I went to see it too. Loved it. Gohan is my favorite character. So seeing Gohan back out in the forefront and just absolutely kicking ass is just a ton of fun. I will admit, I was a little bit nervous about the animation style going into it, because again, I loved the animation style with Broly. Like, that was just so clean and it was just so crisp. I actually ended up watching Broly again, literally right after I got home from watching Super Heroes, I went ahead and rewatched Broly too. And again, both of those movies just fantastic. Such a good time. Dom, are you a big Dragon Ball fan? Do you have much experience with the series?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've not watched the whole of the new superhero movie, but I read about it. I'm very much that type of person. But equally, I still have reason to watch it, because obviously, without spoilers, certain motions, certain scenes reawaken some elements of a certain saga within Dragon Ball Z. I'm definitely looking forward to giving it a watch. But equally, the Broly movie, I actually just rewatched the whole fight scene with that. And it's quite interesting just to see how... I don't know whether this is something... like that's becoming now a trend, or whether it's just for certain franchises, but obviously like different productions tried, you know, for example, One Piece, I know, has tried a different animation styles with their movies. So Dragon Ball seems to be doing the same with Super now, with the Broly movie, one style that people were like, "Oh, Goku and Vegeta look younger," even though they're like nearly 50. then obviously superhero has taken much more of almost like that game animation that they now do, which I don't know whether that will lead into the actual game development or not, because it's how close the game developer or Bandai's developers are with actual the anime IP and everyone is quite interesting of how close they actually work together, but equally has its limitations. So it's just, it's for me, from a kind of like seeing where I've sat, it's interesting to think, are these animation styles being tested because they're going to bring import assets in from the movies, the games, or is it just done for lack of a better word, the shits and the giggles?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. Like, I do appreciate that they're trying out different things, and I am curious to see if it is going to have any impact on any of their other properties and what they're working with. But Lou, what else? Anything else been going on, or has that been pretty much all Dragon Ball all day?
It's been a lot of Dragon Ball. I've been playing a little bit. I've been playing Hearthstone with Hearthstone Battlegrounds, which is still, in my opinion, the only game mode worth playing in Hearthstone these days. There's a big, big patch coming tomorrow. By the time this is out, the patch is going to be out.
Nice.
So go check out that new patch. They've introduced some really interesting stuff for season two of Battlegrounds. It's just a fantastic game to play. I like to play on my iPad when I'm hanging out in bed and watching a video. I'll have it on my iPad there. Which is kind of like hard mode because you don't have the plugins with the extra stats and stuff like that. But it's still a lot of fun. Still a great game, but mostly just still looking forward to the new WoW Classic expansion, Wrath of the Lich King, at the end of September, and then Persona 5 on PC after that. So I'm super excited. It's gonna be a great fall for gaming for me.
It really will. There's a lot hitting. Dom, what about yourself? What's new? What have you been playing? What have you been watching? What's been kind of keeping your attention lately?
So in terms of what's new, probably mid of this month, I went to a convention called TF Nation, which is Europe's like largest Transformer convention. So I have a lot of new plastic crap that the community likes to say. So, you know, for those of classic, you've got characters like Cosmos that have been released. But then when you've got people of my age, you've got people like Scourge from Robots in Disguise 2001 series, who this guy, like, I won't make this too much of a figure thing, but let's just say I cannot let this guy go. And it was actually really nice on Saturday because I had my nephew and niece come round, and my nephew, he loves trucks, and he instantly saw this guy in truck mode and he just gravitated to him, and I was just like, who wouldn't gravitate badass looking truck. So that's kind of like new in the collection. But in terms of watching, I watch like all sorts at the moment, so I, you know, keep up to date with what's new, like with One Piece, or talking about hero like movies and such. I'm really wanted to see One Piece Red, which is the new movie for that. So hopefully that'll get a release soon. They've only said fall of this year, so don't know when that'll be. But you know, keeping up with some of the series, but also watching old series like Code Geass. People kept saying how good that was. I've just finished season one and it was pretty good, so I'm gonna be on to season two. But then you got shows like She-Hulk, which having watched Miss Marvel, I can already say that She-Hulk feels a bit better paced, because Miss Marvel felt like it was going somewhere, then they just threw out that script and put a new script in. She-Hulk feels like they're slowing down the pace, but they got it one angled. And the recent episode that they've done links into one of the movies, so that's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of games, again, not purposely driven, but I often, at least weekly now, play Naruto Shippuden Striker. So I've just made a character and just keep working on leveling them up as a, not as like a, oh, this has a goal to it. It's just like casual, like it's fun. And, you know, sometimes when you're going to get attacked, you're just like, nani? it is just fun. It's a chilled game. I started getting it back into Fall Guys with a friend. But in terms of newish games, the new, well, not semi-new, The Quarry, I like played it for a bit and then I've stopped and I keep saying to myself, play it at night to make it much more of an experience. But I just keep going to sleep.
struggle.
And then lastly, the new Saints Row, just got that. And I've made, I call my character the Leoness. So I'm making her the boss of the new, I can't remember whether they call it Los Santos or something else, but whatever the new environment for the Saints Row reboot is, I'm trying to make her the boss of it.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah, I keep hearing mixed things about Saints Row. People seem to really, really like it or really not. How are you finding your time with it so far? Like, are you enjoying what the game is?
It's definitely like, it's not like, like some reboots just like completely reshape the landscape, while this reboot just feels like they've taken bits from each of the last four games and merged them together. So if you, for example, really enjoyed like the controls of the more recent games, you can get more of that. But then equally, it's not so high ante where, well, it's still high ante because the first mission is quite a bit like out there, but it's not as high ante as instantly becoming the president. So so far I like it. I wouldn't say it's like, oh my gosh, I'm like super glad that I bought this. It's more, I mean, I got it for less than 50 quid, which again, I don't know the conversion rates, but that's like currently most games come out at 60 quid. The fact that I was almost able to save about 15, 20 quid on launch. Right. I mean, technically you could say it's a trap. Like, like when you compare digital goods and physical goods, there's a comparison nowadays that people are starting to go and say, oh, actually, because of this cost and this cost, shouldn't be this much. But it's just like, you just sit there and you're like, well, I'm just happy that I feel like I've made a saving.
And there you go.
That's the thing with Saints Row. I felt like it's made saving. So, yeah.
Nice. That's awesome. Well, I hope you enjoy your continued time with it. As for myself, I've also been a bit busy. Similarly, watched Superhero. Really, really liked it. It was a ton of fun. I really do feel like that movie is like a love letter to like longtime Dragon Ball fans. Like even like throwaway references to like the episode of DBZ where Piccolo tries to get a driver's license and fails. Like there's just little things like that along the way that really make you like, again, longtime fans. I went with my younger cousin and he's like, who's that? What does that mean? Why are you laughing at that? And I'm like, don't worry about it. I'll explain this to you later. Meanwhile, like the theater was like amped up. They were like laughing and cheering at everything. It was awesome. In terms of gaming, I have been upset. Like I played through all of Rollerdrome. I'll have a review up on the channel this week. That game is awesome. For a game that I had absolutely no hype for and then saw reviews and I was like, maybe I need to play this, and then played it, I absolutely fell in love. For anybody who's unawares, it's like it's almost like Tony Hawk meets Super Hot meets like Neon White, where you're on roller skates and you get sent into these arenas with guns and you basically have to try and clear the arena as fast as possible while you're kind of zipping around on your skates. You have to actually do tricks to reload. You gain reloads back by like grinding and doing cool tricks in the air and stuff. So it actually incentivizes you to learn properly. The game is tough and it gets even tougher as it goes. Like it very much like, but I would never say it becomes unfair. Like there are moments where you die where you're like, okay, I should have taken that enemy out before doing this. I should have used this gun for this situation. I should have done things this way. It never felt punishing, but it does definitely challenge you to really know what you're doing. Really, really awesome. I think it's the most like badass I felt in a game all year. Like it just makes you feel so cool when you're like flipping in the air, you're in slow-mo time, you're blasting things, there's rockets flying by you, exploding all around you with this really cool, like very, very cel-shaded cartoony art style, very much like Sable. The game is a blast. It's a ton of fun. Highly, highly recommend it to anybody who's looking for, you know, a new, cheaper experience that's just a ton of fun. It's a blast. It took me about, I would say, 6 to 7 hours to finish, like, the kind of main story, which I finished, like, 50% of the challenges, so there's plenty more for you to do, and there's, like, a whole mode that opens up after that makes the game even more difficult, which is not for me, but that game is just a ton of fun. I can talk about this because this is going to go up at embargo, but I've been playing The Last of Us Part 1 on PS5. Thank you to PlayStation Canada for sending over a review code for that. So this will be going live alongside the embargo time, and I am having a blast returning to this game. I know a lot of people were very hesitant, and rightfully so. I was in the same boat where, again, this is a full price title that they're putting out. This is $89.99 Canadian dollars. This is $100 here. So is it worth it is the big question, because the game does look fantastic. It looks incredible. It really does feel like this is the version of the game that they always had in their minds. This is how I remember the game living up to this caliber. The gameplay for me still holds up, because they haven't done much in terms of the actual minute-to-minute gameplay. It is the same thing. They've overhauled some of the AI, but like in terms of like you don't have the gameplay enhancement that you had with The Last of Us Part 2. So for me, it's hard for me to recommend this to anyone who's played the game recently. And I think that'll be my giant asterisk. If you are looking for a reason to play this game again, looking absolutely amazing, then I think this is for you. If you are a massive Last of Us fan, if it's been a long time since you've played the original, as it has been for me, I haven't played the original. I played the remastered for a couple hours when it came out a few years ago. But like this game, I'm surprised. I'm not one for replaying games, how much this game has just grabbed me and pulled me back into this universe. Being with Joel and Ellie again, being on this adventure is just incredible. Like there are so many moments where I'm just like, you know, controller down, just having an incredible time watching these cutscenes. Obviously heartbreaking constantly, obviously a very, very, you know, emotional experience. But for me, The Last of Us is one of my favorite games ever, and having the opportunity to come back to it in this way is very special for me. But again, I understand if people do want to wait for a sale on this, if people do not want to pick this up anytime soon, I completely get it, because again, it is the same game. It just looks, it does look visually incredible. So if the graphics are enough for you to invest at full price, go for it. If that isn't, I would tell you to wait for a sale, wait for this to come down, because you know, it is expensive and it is a lot to buy in. It still stays one of the best games ever, in my opinion. So that would be kind of my my shortened review for it. Again, we'll have a review go up alongside this video on Wednesday as well. But you know, if you love The Last of Us, check it out. If you don't, or if it's your first time playing The Last of Us, 100% pick it up. Otherwise, wait for a sale, grab it when you feel the time is right. You know, vote with your wallet here, because again, questionable whether this is worth the full $90 price tag as things stand. But that's pretty much been it for me. We'll have much more coverage coming for a bunch more games coming very, very soon. But let's get into it, Dom, because again, we're here talking to you. We're here talking about Yuki. We're here talking about Raise the Game. So I think kind of where I want to start the conversation is, before we get into the specificities of all that, I wanted to ask you, what does diversity and inclusion and equality in the gaming space mean to you, and why does it matter?
I mean, like, what you talked about there with The Last of Us, obviously it doesn't make the whole picture, but like, you know, thinking of how much money someone's got, low social economic barriers, and just like some people never get to play those games because they're super high price and then it's not until sales, but they do get the chance. So I guess to kind of roll back into your question, for me, what equality, diversity, and inclusion is and what it means is it's just making the space a much more positive, much more safer environment. You know, I've personally, just to like go straight into it, like, yeah, when I was in school, I had no desire for a career or really anything else. I would just go to school and just be like, come back and then play games. So I think for me, having no ambition and then suddenly finding out, you know, you could actually, instead of just playing these games, you could actually make them or be involved in the industry around them. Because technically, people still can get paid for playing games through esports, QA testing, and other means as well. And I mean, that's the thing. It's like trying to keep this as tangent free as possible. But like, I think for me, it's just like, it's the first place to work or something that's just given me ambition. It's something casual. It's something professional. It mixes those two places really well. And I'm very much someone who doesn't want to wear, like, I'd never have wanted to wear a suit and go in and feel like, oh, I've got to fit in. I just want to be myself. And I think games are a creative media that show that that can happen. Like, obviously, like, when I was younger, never had the idea of how they were made. But even now, like, now I know how they're made, and even learning more about how they're being made. You know, people can still be themselves. People come together. They mix all their ideas together to make a hot pot of whatever the game is. You know, like you said about, I totally forgot its name, but the one by Roll 7 that you just talked about with the
Roller Drome,
which interesting. Yeah. You know, I didn't even know, like, that just came out of nowhere. Like, Ollie World was meant to be the one that I knew of on their radar, and then suddenly Roller Drome comes out and actually seems to be taking more of the spotlight, which at least in people circles I've seen. But you know, that game was that wasn't just like, oh, we're gonna make it exactly this. It was created with a base idea that through teamwork and effort created that final product, and it's such a fascinating thing. So you know, games are creative, technical, professional, casual, let's say casual, not unprofessional. So it's just, it feels like it's got a lot of energy and a lot to offer in that one sense. But equally, like any industry, you know, there's some darkness to it. There's some toxicity. Mm. And I myself, you know, the sad thing is I've seen that myself through my education and my early jobs in the industry. I mean, I've had one company who used, because I'm autistic, dyslexic, with traces of ADHD. I identify as LGBTQ+, and I come from a single parent home. So just to kind of, that kind of also adds to the reason why I feel diversity and inclusion is so important, is so that more people who are from backgrounds similar to me, or even the opposite, from all the categories I didn't mention, you know, people have a place to feel comfortable. But circling back, like, one company used my autism against me. And, you know, I had one company who promised me, you know, full-time contract and money, didn't pay me for 5 months. I was an intern. I did 40 hours a week, though. And then when they finally did pay me, they cut that money in half, even though I was over the age. So they used the underage payment as the excuse, even though I was overage. So, you know, from those, not only my lived experience as a person, but my lived experience as a professional, I want to see this industry flourish. And thus, you know, it's kind of a mixture of that desire from, you know, like I said, about the creativity, but also seeing, having been through the rubbish myself, I want to make sure those that come into this industry or see this industry see it better. But equally, that's not just to say see it better, but also just to help improve, because, you know, like I mentioned before, you know, some people may think it's just programming and art in games, when there's just so many different careers. I mean, there's probably over 200 plus careers, and probably most students and most young people, even older people, won't even know what they could get up to. So it's not just making games more inclusive, but it's making it more visible and more accessible, right, and just making it as nice a place to play, work, and make a living as possible.
I love how you said that, because I do feel that, like, on, it's as much as we talk about, you know, seeing yourself in gaming, I also think just giving people the tool set to be able to understand the possible avenues and possible pathways that they can work and exist in an industry that they care and that they love, you know, so much. So something that I was kind of curious about is, you know, you've spoken about the difficulties that you've had kind of coming into the industries and how you've been taken advantage of, you know, because of who you are. What was your path like to get to Yuki? How did you kind of, you know, land on Raise the Game And what are you trying to, what are you hoping to accomplish with Raise the Game specifically?
So, I mean, it's quite, it's like how I kind of got here was again part of that lived experience, because I've never done anything EDI related before in any of the jobs. But because I already have this, as a person, I already have certain lived experiences. And then through those bad experiences, I'd probably say this journey specifically began in 2019, where when I became an autistic play ambassador and started going to events to, you know, spread the word about them and advocate what they're doing. I started to meet more and more people in a more authentic way. So unlike where before I'd be like, here's my CV, here's my business card. Now I just kind of push that aside and like, you know, this is something I'm passionate about. You should be passionate about it too. And that actually opened some opportunities. One such opportunity was I gave a talk at the Best Places to Work Awards 2019. I'm a bit annoyed that they didn't record that one, because they've recorded all the ones. But what was really nice is I gave a talk around how to do more for autistic individuals, both as players and as employees. And one of the things I highlighted was, you know, if you have a lot of neurodiverse employees and they talk about their sensory needs and they want, you know, lower sensory needs, instead of like, for example, if you're in it as a, together as a team, instead of clapping, you can do flapping, which is like this. So I said that mid talk. So I at least had like another 10 to 15 minutes after I said that. And when I concluded my talk, instead of clapping, everyone in the room did the flapping. So I
amazing.
Really, again, it's one of those things where you're like, oh, are people listening? And you literally fundamentally say, this is one way you can do something. And they did.
Incredible.
So from that moment, I kind of was on people's radars a little bit. And then Yuki were looking for maternity cover for their office manager role, which having kind of 3 years prior, or if not even 4 years, I'd interviewed for a PA role there. That PA role I didn't get, but then ironically, the person who did get it left 2 weeks later because they wanted to be a writer. And then they got a new person in and that didn't work out. So I eventually did get that role, but I got it like 2 months towards the end of it. And that didn't really, I didn't think that was the right time or place. So when I, coming back to 2019, when I was told about this opportunity of potentially being an office manager, I said, oh, I'd be interested. And what was really nice is that they brought in a senior operations manager called Sophie Magara, who even to this day, though she's not part of Yuki, I consider her just a friend now. Like, yeah, like when she worked for Yuki's industry friend, but now that like, she doesn't work for Yuki, works for a different organization, are still a friend. So I think yeah, that connection I made with Sophie kind of encouraged me to take on that opportunity, which again, I'd never done office management, but I had transferable skills that led into it, you know, having done events fight for the 5 years prior, in and out, and just as people like to say, I have a unique laugh and smile. So, you know, when people come to the door, instead of being like, get out of here, get out. You're like smiling, welcome them. So, you know, I just took on that opportunity. And for 2 months, I was doing really well at it. And then suddenly lockdown comes in, which, you know, I can't help the lockdown. But equally, you know, lockdown isn't all bad from the experience I've seen in the sense of the work. It's actually through lockdown, we've seen game companies who, I mean, the fundamental thing is game companies used to say, you can never remote work. Right. And then literally in 2 week span, if not less, every game company that ever said that was put wrong. And it made a much more, a gap for a much more inclusive way of working and reduce a barrier that is still there, but a barrier nonetheless. So through that, obviously, office manager, mainly working in an office, didn't really have much to do anymore. So the good thing was that Raise the Game, just before the lockdown was put in place, was launched. And unfortunately, the two people who did all the pre-production for it, one of them unfortunately left. And equally, you know, she did amazing work. Her name's Andorona. She was the policy manager at the time. I still catch up with her from time to time. So she's an amazing individual. But she wanted to get a new role, get a new direction. And then the other person who was with the work, Dan Woods, who's still at Yuki, but is the project's special projects lead. He's obviously all about just getting these projects off the ground and then getting on to the next project.
Right.
So there wasn't really no one to grab Raise the Game until, obviously, I had nothing else to do, which doesn't sound too great from that. But, you know, I took it, and, you know, from that kind of end of or middle March onwards, I just excelled. And not to brag too much, but I made it my own. And, you know, 2.5 years later, we went from 18 partners on that original launch to now 205 with
incredible
backlog of 30. You know, I've done hell of a lot of activities. And, you know, I've really put the blood, sweat and tears into this project. Mm. And that's not to say, you know, Yuki hasn't recognized that and put investment in. But, you know, it has been a thankless role at times. And, you know, I've done that solely, you know, my manager has supported. And, of course, you know, I think fundamentally the community that is the Raise the Game partners and supporters like yourselves have just made it much more easier. Because there's still, I mean, like, one thing I will say is whenever a controversy comes up, I do always keep an eye out. And obviously, you know, there's some of the bigger companies may still have those kind of elements, but for the most part, like, I would say, and the irony is actually, those launch partners that I had no say in are generally the ones that are still got traces of those controversies. But every partner since, I generally, like, have had no issues with.
Amazing.
It's really nice just to know that, you know, the work you put into the community is coming out. But then, yeah, there is so much more that can be done, and you just keep doing it and doing it. So to kind of totally forgot your original question now. But yeah, I got into the role at least. So I think I've answered one part of your two-part question.
Yeah, no, you've totally hit on, you know, on how you kind of got there. And my next question was just going to be about, you know, Raise the Game as a whole. But before we get into that, I'm actually going to toss it over to Lou to see, because I know Lou's research and questions are unparalleled. So I'm going to toss it over to him before I bounce back in.
Sure, yeah. I completely agree with everything you're saying here. My girlfriend is a graphic designer, and she went back to school for graphic design. And while she was there, she was thinking, what should I specialize in? Because she loves video games. And she was thinking, well, maybe I should start getting into 3D modeling, and I can potentially get a you know, a job in the games industry. And of course, me being, you know, I keep up with sort of gaming news and gaming culture, and I know about the historicity of toxicity in the workplace when it comes to the games industry. And I said, you know, are you sure you really want to do that? Like, you know, you're a woman. There's going to be some some challenges getting into the industry. You know, there's a lot of articles and news that come out pertaining to people in the games industry being overworked. And she was like, it made her really sort of second guess that decision, which is a shame, because if it's something you're interested in and passionate in, I feel like you could only benefit the industry as a whole by applying that passion towards making great games. So I know that is a huge deal in the games industry. So Thank you for everything that you've done so far with Yuki. And, you know, Ontario, Canada, and Canada in general, is a pretty good place for games creators, for developers. And one of the reasons that is because video games are considered an art form. And because they're considered an art form in Canada, they get certain allocations and privileges and government assistance that because it's an art, because it's a protected thing. So just in terms of games in general, Dom, I wanted to ask, what does the phrase or what does the idea of games as art mean to you? What do you think about that?
So definitely to kind of answer like your lead into it, I definitely think it was a good idea to kind of do that research and kind of question to your partner because, I won't sit here and go, you should get right into it because the unfortunate thing is there are some companies, I mean, like I've said about my own background, some companies take advantage. One of the key things I often say to partners is if you want to see these kind of inclusion and diversity changes, don't make them the add-on to people's work and burn them out from it. Make it included and embedded into their workload so that they fundamentally improve your workplace, but also still do the work that you're paying them to do. So I would definitely say to anyone listening, always have a look at your local area, just do the research. Mm. And if obviously, if you've got questions, look for people who are open to talk in industry. I've got my DMs open. Obviously, luckily I haven't had anything harsh sent my way, but I would definitely say, I've always got my messages open. But to answer your question, yes. I fundamentally do believe games are an art form, but they're also a way of innovation through technology. And, we're starting to see even more uses to games. We're seeing them as ways of education. Like back in the 90s, I don't know if you've ever heard of the game Subinis. That was my jam. It was all about saving these creatures called Subinis from these. You never saw what the creatures looked like, but it was all about saving them and getting them up their own island. And the whole gamification of it was through math skills. So like you'd have to put them on the right number of plates. You'd have to match up the colors and such. And it was just such an amazing game. And it's weird to think like 20 or so years later. They've done a reboot since, which I still want to get that reboot. But fundamentally, it's a game that sticked with me and it's shown me like, games actually can be educational and fun. And then sadly, from the noughties and onwards, many games started doing that less. But then we're starting to see more and more games get back to that kind of education but fun aspect. But equally, games are being used for mental health as well now. And actual like VR games are used in people's ways of rehabilitating them to walk again. So like people get given clinics, get given VR kits, get put on VR trainings that allow them to, so if they can't naturally, if their traditional methods of rehabilitation for walking doesn't work, they try the VR kit. And what's been proven through those kind of clinical tests and studies is that they're starting to work. Like those that they can't get through the traditional means of their practices work with the VR sets. And there's just so much magic. And again, I keep using the word magic, but it's so hard not to use it because, games are, you can literally take the concept art from a game and if you put it in a frame and put it in a museum and didn't say to people, this is from a game, I bet you a lot of people would be like, who did that? And you'd be like, you'd say the artist and then they'd be like, where are they at? And you'd be like, at this game studio. Didn't you know? And then they'd be like, oh, I've heard games are very not art and not all that. Right. And it's just like, that's the irony. It's like, one of the things that's keeping games down from being these marvels of education and mental health is just, I don't know whether to call it the stigma from mass media or the traditional views of a past generation, but it's kind of these barriers that prevent games from getting to that level. And what's really, and again, I really love the fact that you highlighted that Canada do recognize it, because I think that's why Canada succeeds as an industry for video games, is because the developers actually get supported by government. I mean, even us, I think, I don't, obviously, no actual figures, but I think, I think possibly you in Canada, you might get more government support than we do. Obviously, that's, we're trying to get more support out of government, but I would definitely say in the global scale of things, Canada are one of those places where it's a bit easier to have a games career than other places.
I love the way that you talked about it, especially like all the different applications, you know, of gaming going forward and how things are changing. And I know we're kind of winding down on time here. So I think my final kind of question is, you know, you mentioned you have big plans moving forward. There are things that you want to do with Raise the Game and with Yuki. Where do you, like, you know, what's in store for the rest of 2022? And where do you want to take Raise the Game beyond that?
So I have, like, literally I have a big list, but the core things that I'm I can definitely say without, like, kind of looking at my thing and going, is this confirmed? So one of the big projects that I'm currently working on is called Empower Up. So we're working with we're working with a recruiter called Amicus, who also have an initiative called G Into Gaming, which is all about getting more women into the games industry. And the founder, Liz Prince, who I would say is a very good industry mate, friend of mine, mate, friends, same thing. that's my dyslexia right there. It's just like these words, they're the same, aren't they? But yeah, we've kind of been talking for months, talking about kind of resources and guidance that the industry needs. So we thought, come together to create an industry resource where you people can find in the industry or out of the industry. It'd be a public resource, but obviously we'd be driving it towards the games industry, where they can find information around how to support neurodiverse people in the workplace, what mental health support should be your fundamental baseline, what kind of things should we do to encourage more people from ethnic backgrounds into games. And we'll just be like, we'll have some set content on launch, but we'll be developing that platform forward. So, like, unlike a lot of toolkits, which, I mean, fundamentally the word toolkit might vanish from our system, because fundamentally we want to create a resource that just keeps growing and becomes this one-stop shop for guidance and templates around EDI and CSR for the games industry. So instead of a games company going, I don't know how to do this, it's like, well, you do now, it's all here, it's one-stop shop. And I think that's the key thing. Like, I think, like, people could say, oh, there's all this guidance and all this and you can go there, but I think what we've got to be, it's both in a good way and a bad way, we've got to admit about humanity, is that we want convenience. We want things given to us. Some, obviously, we still, you know, drive for some things. So I guess we're taking Empowered Up and kind of fundamentally fulfilling that name by giving that convenience and giving that kind of one-stop feel to people. But we're also empowering up the content that's there by creating and, you know, producing this resource ourselves to have it in place for the industry. And, you know, in the lead up to it, because we're nearly at the final ramp for it, of being able to officially, like, say this is when it will be released, be ready, because I could talk about it, but obviously no set release right now, that's going to change before the end of the year. like you say, what's coming up for the rest of that will definitely change before the end of the year. So, you know, we want to just be able to go to people and be like, here is this resource that you can look at and keep using. And obviously we're going to try and develop it even more and more so. So kind of, we got a three-phased approach for it, where we start off as a resource hub, then we create a login state and create what we're calling health checks of understanding, mm-hmm. which will then be able to be applied to game companies to see how much they know about these different areas of industry and neurodiversity and EDI in general. And from that kind of surveys, they'll be able to determine where they are on their journeys of inclusion and diversity, but also we'll be able to see how we can help the industry more and more so. So keep working towards, again, just that push of making the industry more inclusive. And then, you know, another big project that I'm working on that, again, I'm hoping to give official... I've got one thumbs up right now, but I want to give both thumbs up for it, which is called the Access November campaign, which is all about elevating accessibility, disability, and neurodiversity in the games industry.
Nice. Okay.
So, you know, these are some of these big, juicy projects that I'm looking to get working on. And there's still, you know, there's lots more that I still want to do. So basically, I just want to keep doing what I'm doing and drive forward the appeal of inclusion and diversity, not have it be a buzzword, and just show that it needs to be a part of our everyday life in industry, both for players, content creators, streamers, and industry folks.
And that's something that I really love about your approach to all of this, is that, like, you really are working not just, you know, not just in the UK, not just with developers, not just with publishers. You're reaching out to content creators. You're working out to kind of really reach out to the entire industry and say, hey, look, this is the way, and these are the ways that we can continue to make improvements so that everyone and anyone can enjoy their time here and their, and you know, be, feel safe and included in this space. So Dom, I just want to say thank you. And, like, I'm proud to be one of the Raise the Game Pledge supporters. I'm we have Burnout here. This is something that we've been screaming about from the hilltops for as long as we can remember. So we are totally in for the ride. We are here to support. Like, thank you. Genuinely thank you for being who you are and for the work that you're doing, because it's because of the work that you're doing that somebody else coming into the space down the road will feel better, will feel happier, won't have to deal with a lot of the things that, you know, that you've had to go through. So kudos to you, dude, because it takes a lot. And I just want you to know that, like, we see you, we appreciate the work that you're doing, and I just keep doing it, because there's nobody else that's going to.
Well, I definitely, like, I absolutely appreciate that. And equally, you know, not to, I mean, some people say you should just take it, Dom, but it's just like, you know, again, without organizations like you guys, with Burnout Brighter and all the pledge partners and such, it couldn't be done. So equally, I do think I am in a nice, privileged position where I've been able to given the opportunity to make things happen. But equally, without the community and people like yourselves who believe and help push, it wouldn't have happened. So I just have to say thank you as well. And thank you to any of the Raise the Game community that's listening here, because, you know, I do what I do to allow you all to do more. And, you know, it's not like a take, it's a give and take. Mm-hmm. So I give my all for you to not to make it sound for you to take my all, but then also to give your all back. So
of course
it's an inclusive approach, because, you know, I think one of the biggest things I see or hear from those that aren't in the community is, what is the value it gives to my business? And I think the Raise the Game community shows that value in itself, because, mm-hmm. yeah, the fact I've just mentioned, give and take, like, you know, for example, if we're subtracting and saying, let's say you're my boss and I'm your employee, if I'm giving you my all and you're taking it and then giving me your all back, that makes a healthy relationship.
Yep.
Thus, your workflow, your productivity and your effectiveness becomes greater, not only as people but as a work company. Equally, you know, thinking about, you know, just going way back to Saints Row, like, when I got onto the game, one of the first things I did was to look at their accessibility features. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you think not just like how you make people feel included in your environment, in your organization, but actually if you think about how you can be a helping hand and give to others outside your organization, specifically in this case, the games you make these accessible features. Not only are you allowing your game to be able to be sold to more people because more people can play it through, you know, colorblind settings or dyslexic text to word or, you know, subtitle options, but equally you're allowing people to go, oh, they actually care and think about me. So it just overall, by making the industry more inclusive, you're not only helping your personal life, but you're also helping people in general by doing more.
Well, that, and it's just like, again, like if you're showing the, if you're showing people, hey, look, we're willing to go, it shouldn't be the extra mile. These settings should be commonplace. And I'm glad that we're seeing more and more. So specifically, again, referencing The Last of Us Part 1, the amount of accessibility features that they've added into the game just to allow everyone and anyone, or at least giving people more of an opportunity to experience that thing, the, you know, the product. People will keep coming back with your next product. People will keep coming back. If you give people a safe and inclusive space to play, more people will continue to support that and champion that. With the work that we're doing, with the work that you're doing with Raise the Game and with Yuki, I hope that we'll continue to make this industry a better and better place so that people who do come in won't have to deal with as much, will not have to deal with as much toxicity, as much hate, and just enjoy the games the way that they are meant to be enjoyed together, you know, as a community. So, Dom, the last thing that I want to ask you before we go is, we always bring it back to mental health when we can. We always like to have conversations about the games that have mattered to us. So I want to ask Dom, what's a game that matters to you? A game that has gotten you through a tough time, a game that you think deserves to be celebrated for something that it's done, or just a game that you think is very meaningful to yourself?
I mean, like, I always think about this, and there are different games for different reasons. I mean, yeah, again, I'll just do it. The early games I referenced, but going back to Naruto Shippuden Striker, for example, like I think most recently that's given me an outlet just to be mindless and play a game. So as a form of stress relief, that game has given me that. But I would probably say, for this answer specifically, I would like to give, again, the game I hinted to, or... If you don't know me well enough, you'd probably get to know that this is a game I constantly will always reference. But Mass Effect, that, you know, I you know me well enough, you'll know I always come back to it, and I think it's just so fundamental because, like I mentioned, like I was someone who just had no ambitions in school, and you know, who knows what I would have done, in, you know, now. Without knowing games are a career. But fundamentally, the game that led me to that was Mass Effect, because to keep it as short and sweet as possible, I one day went into Blockbusters, RIP Blockbusters.
Cause RIP.
I miss that so much. I mean, I get why games have to be downloaded onto the hard drive, but equally, it's like, I just want to play a game. Blockbusters was If we were, yeah, obviously in school, and for those achievements on Xbox, that's how I'd get so many achievements, because I'd just be playing these games and get achievements. But that aside, one day I went into Blockbusters and I just saw no game that was new, had no, you know, I was just like, oh, but I want something. And suddenly at the end of the aisle, I saw one game. I had no idea what it was. I just picked it up and it was just like, yeah, I'll take it. And then, you know, 2 weeks of 200 hour playing the game later. And this wasn't like summer holiday, this was during school. So
right.
I'd go to school and then play it. And so if you divide 200 by 2 weeks, I'd probably say that I literally got home and played it. And so I did that. And then I literally, when I had to return it, I literally put it in the thing, went back in and was like, can I re-rent it? And obviously re-rented it again. So I overall, in a month, did 400 hours of Mass Effect, and it just blew my mind away. And because I was so obsessed, I looked at the, well, YouTube wasn't what it was back then, but YouTube, had a few videos. But then at the time, Xbox had trailers that it put on its system, and it also put behind the scenes. And there was this one called Sci First Fi documentary series that did an episode of Mass Effect. And someone in there said, you could get a career in games. And ever since I heard that, I just did the research, looked into college, looked into uni, and just 5 years of education and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And now I'm here. That's, you know, again, it's just, it's made, that game has made my life what it is, not only from a career standpoint, but I would probably say socializing, because I'm naturally like akin to, like, I like to talk and such, but I'd probably say I'm very, very easy hermit. With Mass Effect, it's kind of connections with your crewmates and talking to them. It also, in those early stages at school, actually made me think, how do I talk to people and how do I socialize? So it not only had that professional, I don't know, upliftal, I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah. A bit of a spark, professional spark, let's call it.
Professional revolution, because I had no, I had no professionalism, and then they just made a revolution in me. So I had that professional resolution, but then there was also that personal meaning to me that started making me think, how do I actually socialize with people? And that game will, and again, as I say, I talk about it enough, but I know it has flaws, but I'm not saying it's a perfect game. But it's probably my most meaningful game. And then there's other games, but I will have that be my answer to your question.
Perfect. And that's why I love this question. Just learning about the stories that games, the impact that they really, truly do have. That isn't just, here's, you know, a media bite, a sound clip of, you know, why games are awful. It's stories like that that truly matter. And the stories like that that truly show what the game industry can do for people. So Dom, once again, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for doing what you do. Your work is so incredibly important, and I'm sure we're going to have you back on in the future to talk even more at greater lengths. But people, if people wanted to see more and hear more from you now, Dom, where could they find more? If you could hit us with the links, the plugs, where can people learn more about Raise the Game?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me on. Definitely would love to come on. Maybe early next year when you can go, Dom, we met you this so many months ago. What have you actually done since we met you? So you, because that's one of the things I want people to be assured as well with me, is that I don't want it just to be lip service. Mm-hmm. Actions mean more than words to me. So, you know, people have got constructive feedback. I don't want just like, oh, don't like this game. It's there.
Yeah.
Like, give me constructive feedback, but also keep me accountable, because I'm gonna keep people accountable. And I'm really sassy doing it. So just put that out there, like, you know, always expect some sass, but also, you know, I try to keep people accountable, but I, you know, want people to keep me accountable too. But to the plugs and such, beyond that social sass, I would probably say, actually, it's a bit funny. Like, I do, since, like, doing more work, like, from these, like, projects and working with companies, I have generally just do less socializing on, like, I literally only use Twitter and stuff for the DMs to talk to people. So, like, I don't do, like, posts. I just generally DM people. So if people ever had questions or such for me, as I've referenced Twitter, you can catch me at DominicShaw94. That's probably, like, from a casual perspective, that's probably the easiest way to get me. But equally, I'm also on LinkedIn, so just type in DominicShaw94. That should hopefully bring my profile as number one. I will say there is another Dominic Shaw in the UK industry. He is a games artist who has worked for some big names, currently at End Dreams, who are a fantastic company, and also on The Pledge. But he is not me, and I am not him. best way to remember it is, you want the Dom Shaw who's all about EDI. So nice. I'd probably say LinkedIn, Twitter, the best ways to get me. And then I do have a Discord, but I can't remember my Discord right now. So basically, reach me via those two ways, or that was the other one, dom@yuki.org.uk. Again, happily to take emails. I recently just had someone who won the esports tournament at the Commonwealth Games reach out to me to ask how they can do for the industry. And they are a trans individual, which made my heart flutter, just not only for the fact that the Commonwealth Games actually have esports now, but the fact that they won it and they were celebrated as someone, again, from a marginalized background. It's like, you know, if that can happen more and more, then you know you're doing your job. Because, yeah, the one thing I don't want to hear is, you know, the person won and I've seen compilations of it in the past, but like where you see like people win a competition and then you have like the show talkers or the hosts of the show just like backlip the victory, and it's just like, that's not what you want. So I'm really happy that they reached out and stuff. But yeah, to take away my little talky talk tangents, Twitter, Dominic Shaw 94, LinkedIn, again, Dominic Shaw 94 if needed, and my email is dom@yuki.org.uk. Those are the best ways to reach me. If you have questions or want to get more involved in EDI in the games industry, I'd probably say as developers and publishers, that's kind of my number one. But equally, if you are players or into esports, I have connections. So I can, if I can't do something for you, I can signpost you to people.
There you go. Perfect. Well, make sure we'll have all that information in the show notes below as well, so you can easily just go down, click, and find Dom.
You can just fast forward my bit and just be like, there it is. I didn't need to listen to
you. Listen, burnout is nothing without its tangents. We rarely stay on topic for anything more than a couple minutes at a time. So you're well at home here. Don't even worry about it. But Dom, once again, thank you, everyone. Thanks for watching. We will see you next week.